You're in with the Ghost of Radio. Welcome back. It's this, our shared podcast, where we dive into, explore, excoriate, or exonerate mid-century horror radio. Because no one else is going to do it. We have to take this work on ourselves. So let's do it. Let's get into the cauldron and pull out an episode at random. Oh, this is very random. Our episode this week is called The Black Band from the Hermit's Cave. The show is called The Hermit's Cave. The episode is called The Black Band. You know what to do. You go to the internet. You go to relicradio.com or to archive.org, the internet archive. Or you just go to a non-tracking browser and you type in Hermit's Cave Radio. And soon you'll find yourself listening to this episode. You will find it. Will it find you? Well, you won't know for certain until you've listened to it and come back here to hit some clips, discuss, make sense, and potentially enjoy. I am here to guide you, and I have some responsibility for your well-being, so I will say, I am not promising a ton of enjoyment out of this. This is going to be a very educational episode for you. So why don't you go listen to it and then come back here? Off you go. See you soon. All right, we are all back from listening to The Black Band from The Hermit's Cave. And what did you make of it? No air date on this episode. It ran from 1936 to 1947. And if you do go to Relic Radio to listen to these episodes, you will recognize in this series intro that this is a clip that I think the horror podcast, there are many different pods on Relic Radio, and I think the one called The Horror incorporates the Hermit intro into its own intro, so you will be familiar with it. The Black Band. Now, I know what you think. You think I'm just going to wail on this for being boring, for being one of those stories with no plot. I'm not going to do that. I instead am going to take this opportunity to learn you up with a teachable moment about the history of storytelling. That's pretty grand, but I think we can do it. Let's hear that intro and let's get started.
The Mummers in the Little Theater of the Air. Now, the Hermit is ready.
Ghost stories. Weird stories. And murders, too. The Hermit knows of them all. Turn out your light. Turn them out. Have you heard the story? The Black Band, eh? Then listen while the Hermit tells you the story, just as it was told to him.
You know that over-the-top Hermit, whose laugh is so, so grating by the middle of an episode, is really important here. Because it shows the Hermit was one of the earlier shows starting in 36. The first was The Witch's Tale, and then the first run of Lights Out. And then we've got The Hermit's Cave as dedicated series, not other series that sometimes did a scary story. So by that point, the bar had been set for horror radio. And that's what they're trying to do with The Hermit. They're going to tell a story that's very literary, that's very about imagine. Just let me paint you a word picture of the scene, the atmosphere, the environment of Paris during the Reign of Terror. And not in a horror way, like, ooh, we're going to see a lot of people get killed, but in a deeply emotional way. Like, ooh, imagine how this sensitive young art student suffered. And like, they're trying to tell a story that isn't just scary. You're not supposed to walk away from this story chilled, spooked out. You don't think, you know, you don't even spend time. You don't waste 1 second wondering if Marie was really there or not. You know that she was and that he married her, and maybe they consummated that undead relationship. What is it with the zombie sex stories lately? We had one last week, too. You don't wonder about it. You're not supposed to. It's really a story that is just supposed to get you thinking about what it was like, you know, what it would be like to, in that negatively romantic time of Paris during the revolution, and ooh, what a, you know, those aristocrats who died at the guillotine. Like, your mind is supposed to start wandering to, ooh, you know, those aristocrats, they really lived beautiful lives, and oh, you're not supposed to wonder, gosh, what happened to Jan? How did he? But aware of the fact that this was not Masterpiece Theater, the Hermit's Cave is trying to slap some scare onto this with those hermit interludes. Oh, no. They're gross because they come in a mocking way at some really particularly ugly points in the story. So they are trying to really reenact Tale of Two Cities here. They want you to get in a Dickensian mood of feeling like you are right there in the ratty streets of Paris and you're caught up in the revolution. And they threw in kind of a horror element, but it's mostly to arouse your pathos and to make you feel sympathy for the aristocrats. But that somebody there at the studio was saying, girl, we're supposed to be telling a horror story here. We're competing with Lights Out. So they slap on those hermit interludes to try to make it scarier, more conventionally horror radio. Sad to say that's why they don't work. Because if we listen to the intro of the story, you can get that Dickensian sense. Let me get you. You're in the streets of Paris. You're in the garret with the art student and the priest who's in hiding. Whoa, you are there. The only thing horrible about that is, of course, the Dickensian feeling, since we are not the man who loved Dickens.
You ask me to tell you the strangest story I've ever heard. I did not witness what happened to Jan van Dyck, for it was long before my time. But I've heard my grandfather tell of it, as did his father before him. It is a story that's been handed down through the generations of our family. And it is believed. You see, this young Hollander, Jan van Dyck, was a relative of mine. When he was a young fellow, he went to Paris to attend the university. He came to France during the time of the French Revolution, and he suffered intensely because of it. The howling crowds, the bloody executions stabbed at the very soul of one as sensitive as Jan van Dyck. He had one friend in this city in the throes of violence, Father Perrichon, who liked the boy and often invited him to his small rooms. One afternoon, Jan came to him.
Sit down, my boy. You look pale and hungry.
I am hungry, Father. But I cannot eat. What I see on the streets, it turns me inside out.
It is sad for one so young to see only this baser side of man. You need sunlight and only small shadows at this time in your life.
Father Perrichon, all of this horror, these scenes of cruelty, they weaken my faith in my fellow man.
Why do you not return to your own country, Jan?
As soon as I finish studying, I shall go. That is why I work such long hours, day and night, to finish the work, so that I may get away and try to forget.
Time will help you, my boy. The warmth and beauty of your own land will blot out the place de la grève. You will marry, and your own life will make you forget the Paris you are witnessing today.
I often wonder about the marrying part, I mean. You see, Father, I admire beauty so much.
I know.
Since I can remember, I've dreamed of only one woman for me. She is so beautiful, this girl I dream about. I don't think I can ever find her in real life.
It is the beauty of soul that counts you.
Oh, I know this girl I dream of has a soul of beauty, Father.
Come, my boy. What? Let us eat of the little I have to offer.
I don't get it. I don't get what they were laughing about in that scene. Well, I will just move on because, again, the plot, in a way, is just a vehicle to deliver set pieces. So you have to meet Jan, and then you have to meet the priest and picture him, you know, hiding away. And this is just so that we can go to the library with Jan and then cross the place where the guillotine is and spend a lot of time getting the picture of the storm in the sky and the light in the place and the girl at the foot of the guillotine. And then after that set piece, there'll be another one where he takes her, you know, well, first the set piece of him encountering her and she says, no, 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 the shadow of death is upon me. And they really dragged that out for a long time. I didn't actually clip that here. Just atmosphere. It's like the thunder sounds. It's like the thunder sounds of the storm when she says, no, for the shadow of death is upon me. It's not supposed to move the plot. It's supposed to be a reward of the plot. The plot is just getting you from set piece to set piece to set piece of atmosphere and emotion. So let's have the scene where it's after the set piece of the storm itself, and now it's the set piece of the girl at the foot of the guillotine.
Just then there was a lull in the storm. Complete silence seemed to fall over the whole city. Then he heard a sound. He turned back, and there on the bottom step of the guillotine sat a woman, crying bitterly.
I beg your pardon. Can I do anything for you? May I not help you?
No one can help me now.
You've lost someone through the guillotine.
Today I lost everyone. They made me come and watch as one by one they died. I wanted to close my eyes, but I could not.
I understand. Horror kept your eyes open. But why stay here now? Why not leave this place?
I have not the strength. I can still see them marching up the steps, the heavy knife being raised, the whistling thud as it fell, each time taking another of my loved ones from me. The blood of my father, my mother, and my two brothers mingled on that platform today.
Have you no place to go?
No. I have no friends left. They too have gone.
You can't stay here. Come with me.
I cannot accept your offer.
I want to be your friend. I promise that no harm shall come to you. Here, let me help you up.
I am very weak.
You're shivering from the storm. You need warm food and dry clothing.
Have we far to go?
Not far. Across the Point Neuf. How strange it is tonight. All of a sudden, the storm has ended. And Paris is as silent as a tomb. Here, we turn this way.
You are very kind.
You need a friend. And so do I. How careful, these streets are very narrow. Do not touch the walls, they're covered with mold. Soon we'll reach the stairway leading to my apartment. Can you walk a bit farther?
Oui. For you are fairly lifting me along.
Here. This is my place. I'll carry you up the stairs.
Oh, no.
Of course. You're very light. And you're very cold. You should not have stayed out in the rain. I'll put you down until I find my key. Oh, yes, here it is.
They go inside and she goes through a really long, this is the set piece of her protests against death. And he seems to win her, you know, turn her around to hope of a happy future. We will play the short clip where he convinces her to get married that night. Again, you simply cannot think about this. You can't. And it's a weakness of the story. You cannot spend 1 second thinking about the fact that they spend a night together married. Does that mean they had sex? You simply cannot. You can't. It ruins it. It's not even that it could be potentially creepy. It's that it ruins it. That's not a set piece. The thing that could be most horrible, the thing that could actually drive him insane, to think that he consummated a relationship with a ghost, a zombie. We're thinking of last week, aren't we, with ringing the changes. That could drive him mad. But that would ruin the story because you're not supposed to think about the plot. You are supposed to picture the next set piece, which is him going out to the country to look for a wonderful, warm country place. But we're going to play it. I mean, they included it, and then they asked us not to think about it. That's not what you learn to do in Storytelling 101.
It is not impossible. I want to marry you because I love you.
Perhaps you will not want me to be your wife when I tell you what happened to me today.
I don't want to hear it. Our lives began when I found you in the Place de la Grève. I'm going out to get a priest, and we'll be married tonight, now.
But the clergy has been forbidden to practice the rites of religion. Those who have not left Paris are in hiding.
Oh, but I have great news to tell you. My only friend in this city is Father Perrichon. Some time ago, he confided in me, told me that he is a priest. I will go and find him now. Marie.
Yeah.
You consent.
Oui. For I love you.
Yes, these two. One who had suffered untold horrors that day, and one revolted by the tragedies all about him, met on a dark night. Met and found that they believed they had known each other during some other hour. Met and fell in love on sight. Jan looked into Marie's soft brown eyes, gazed on the pale face, and knew that she was the girl of his dreams. With her consent to marry him, Jan rushed out into the dark night, now silent, foreboding as if the black skies were mourning for the dead.
A little foreshadowing there, but we are so used to the set piece of describing the sky that we don't even take it in. They get married, we draw a veil over what happens next, and then he is off to look for their place in the country. And when he gets back, he finds that she is dead. And we're going to play it as it is, which is him finding it and running distraught out of the apartment. And then the hermit being slapped on there to try and put some very modern 20th century horror radio feel into this Dickens story.
Yes, she kept her word. She was there waiting for him. Exhausted from the tragedies of the day before, she was lying across the bed, head hanging over the edge, one arm thrown over her face.
Marie, I found it. I found the most beautiful place you ever saw. A place far from this city of unhappiness. A place that will be heaven for us both. Wait until you see it. Wait till we... Marie? Marie? She doesn't move. She's not breathing. Her hand is cold. No pulse. No pulse. Marie! She's dead. She's dead. Help! Help! She's dead! She's dead! Marie, she's dead! Help!
They have found her while Jan has been away. They have killed her. Who has done this thing? Will Jan find out, eh? The hermit will tell you before the night is done.
And now, the hermit again.
A And now he who tells us the strangest stories ever heard goes on, tells us of what befalls Jan van Dyck after he finds Marie lies dead.
Once you have set up Jan as this sympathetic, romantic hero, to mock his experience is a little bit jarring, to say the least. And it would be like when Sidney Carton walks up the stairs to that guillotine saying, nice flood pants, you know, mocking his sacrifice in some way. Oh, well, that's what the hermit chose to do. So Jan tells the story to the policeman, who then relays the true story of what gives with Marie. And this is another very long set piece where you are supposed to completely forget every word you have just listened to and lose yourself in the grandeur and pathos of the beautiful French aristocracy being mown down by the grotesque mob. The episode could end with this. It's so into it. I mean, if you ask the writer, this is the pinnacle of the story. This is it. This is the set piece you've been waiting for.
Now, listen. Listen carefully. I saw this woman yesterday in his sunset. I know who she is.
She's the one I love. She's gone forever.
Listen. I was stationed near the Place de la Greffe.
You saw as I did, weeping.
I will tell the story if you will listen. Down the street near sunset came the howling mob. Crying for blood, intent on the kill. And down the street came the tumbrils, carrying its victims. Aristocrats whose time had come. The family of La Tarin and the crowds following them. The tumbrel drew nearer the square. The crowd cried out in fury. Then the cart stopped.
Do not fear, Marie. Do not fear, Philippe. My son, have your eyes upward. Look at the sky and believe in God. We have harmed no one. We have done no wrong. We have never spilled blood. We have never hated.
Lord speakers, your time is gone. The guillotine. Take us to the guillotine.
Mama, your eyes in the future, Marie. Look into the eyes of the setting sun. I am ready.
One by one, the family of Monsieur Lafarin walked up to the guillotine. First Madame, then the boys. Then, Monsieur. And then the daughter. She stood there, her head held high, her eyes on the sun now almost gone. The crowd was silent for a minute. She seemed to frighten them. There was a pause, and then...
Just that very short moment, those 7 seconds where he says, as she stood there, the crowd fell silent because she seemed to scare them. So much potential lies in those seconds. For a true horror story, I'm thinking of a story from Lights Out, from Arch Obler's Lights Out, called Execution from 1943. Listen to that story. Go listen to Execution from Lights Out. There's a lot that could have been done there. And yeah, this is good writing. I mean, it's good. It's gripping, you know, but it's not a horror story, really. What we are dealing with, what we want, what we are creating in the mid-20th century for the radio is a different kind of horror than, oh, the French Revolution. I mean, it can be done. It can be done. But just the idea of, you know, getting into, I can't explain it. I think by now you know. It's season five, people. I think you know why this doesn't work as a horror story. It is not throwing anything that we believe in, that we need to believe in to make the world work and be safe, into question. Nothing that we need to rely on is shaken by this story. If you have to wake up in the night tonight, the memory of this story is not going to frighten you. So this is not a mid-century horror radio story like it's supposed to be. And no matter how much this ending tries to force it, it just tries to cram that size 8 foot into that size 2 shoe. Oh, Jan went crazy. Maybe I, his descendant, I'm going to go crazy because I know the story, because it's the strangest story ever told. No, it's not changing the 24 minutes I just spent with you. You're not suddenly making me question everything I believe. It's not happening. If you wanted to tell the set piece, beautiful writing story, then do that. Take it out of the hermit's weird hands and put it somewhere else. Put it on, you know, favorite story or other series that promise to uplift you with great literature. It has no place here in our cauldron. All right, let's get to the conclusion and roll. Heads will roll. I just thought of that. Pretend I didn't say it. Let's roll through.
What are you trying to make me believe?
I am telling you the truth. I stood at the foot of the scaffold yesterday when this woman in your rooms was guilty.
No! She was alive when I left her early this morning when I went to the country. Late last night we were married. I can prove it.
Look, let me show you. You see this black band around her throat? If I remove it, see. If I did not hold the red, it would roll to the floor. Now do you believe? Do you believe?
No! No!
A fit of hysteria overcame Jan. It was the beginning of an hysteria that dragged him into madness. He spent the rest of his days in an asylum. The authorities never believed Jan's story. They said he had dragged a corpse into his room and in his madness believed that she was a living person. But to the day he died, Jan insisted that his story was the truth. And Father Perrichon, he wrote in his journals, he too said the girl had been alive on the night after the storm. He set the date of her marriage. But it didn't tally with the hour and date of her execution. So no one believed. But as time goes on, the story has been told and retold in our family. I've often wondered if it were not true after all. Of course, Jan was a relative of mine. And he went insane. So you may think, I too in touch with madness. But it is the strangest story I have ever known.
There's that storm again. No more set pieces, because that is the conclusion of the story. Officially the strangest story you've ever heard. But I think we all know that that is a lie. We are handed over to the hermit one more time to wrap things up and to really try to put the horror bookend, the modern horror story bookend, onto this extremely resistant story.
The black band was around Marie's throat for a purpose, eh? We who have studied the supernatural, we who have delved into the unknown, we know that in this life of ours occur strange things that no mind can comprehend. Yes, turn on your light. Turn them on. Pleasant dreams.
All characters, places, and occurrences mentioned in the Hermit's Cave are fictitious, and similarity to persons, places, or occurrences is purely accidental.
Wow, what a racket. Oh, my Lord. That is the long, long outro that you rarely hear for the Hermit's Cave and criminy. All those alleged wolf sounds start to sound like a tornado siren at the end there, which is scarier than anything in the story. Give me a good old tornado siren any day. But it's always funny to me when these shows say to you, this was fictitious. They do that on Lights Out all of the time. Now, I don't put it past people who are strange. People are strange. To write in and claim that that story was about me or my ancestor. But it is just funny. Some extremely fantastical Lights Out stories are followed with that disclaimer, which seems to be in earnest. It's not just Arch Obler messing around or Willis Cooper. Same thing would happen with Quiet Please sometimes. Oh, that is it. That's it for the Black Band. And you have learned something about a particular genre of storytelling, which is not about plot, where plot is nothing. Plot is just a way to lift you up and put you in a different place. It's like a musical, isn't it? If we do a little far transfer, what is the plot in most musicals? Just an excuse, just a way to get you to another song. What happens is rarely super important. You walk away from most musicals really into the plot. It's the songs. People do things, say words, and move their limbs simply in order to create another situation which they need to sing. And that's what this storytelling is. And now we get it. You know, we get it. That you will run into, you will encounter this kind of storytelling. Sometimes in mid-century horror radio, it's unwelcome because it's not what this genre is meant to do. It's a very different thing. But you can't hit them all out of the park, right? Doesn't always work. So we're not going to pass too much judgment in Thornville, Purcell, Ellsworth, Bangkok, Seattle, or Virginia Beach. We will try to exercise the judgment of charity. Because we are shipping Mid-Century Horror Radio, and everybody's contributions end up adding to our wealth of knowledge, right? That's a positive spin. Let's go with it. Let's maintain that. So that we can essay some happiness as we go through our week, waiting to get back here again. So, as you go your way this week, be safe, be happy, and I'll see you soon.